Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, quick chat before we start the show. We love all of our Patreon subscribers, so I'm launching a contest to break the 1,000 subscriber mark before the end of the year. So here's what we're going to do. The 1,000th subscriber at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow will get to co-host an entire show with me. I'm serious about this. You get a chance to rant about Trump or whatever's on your mind to tens of thousands of listeners. Again, that's subscriber number 1,000 on our Patreon page. We'll get to co-host this podcast for one exciting episode. So when you get a chance, make sure to stop by our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow and sign up for at least $1 a month. You'll hardly miss it, and you'll be supporting the show in the best way possible. Don't forget to tell all your friends, too. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com or click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. Thank you in advance, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Partisanship's over. We elected a president. This is for everybody. No banners tonight. American flag.
Okay, but we're using the seal, and I'll put Senate and House leadership up there.
No balloons, no confetti.
Why?
It's not a party.
It is a party.
Yeah, but we won. We don't have to pander.
Please don't say that.
On your birthday, don't we pander to you?
Not as much as I'd like.
I'm not kidding.
What are you babbling about?
We haven't won anything yet.
The speech is done.
Two speeches are done.
What's the second?
I've got a speech if he wins, I've got a speech if he doesn't.
You wrote a concession?
Of course I wrote a concession. What, do you want to tempt the wrath of the whatever from high atop the thing?
No.
Then go outside, turn around 3 times and spit. What the hell's the matter with you?
It's like 25 degrees outside.
Go!
He wrote a concession speech.
Of course he wrote a concession speech. Why wouldn't he? What possible reason would he have for not writing a concession speech?
The wrath from high atop the thing.
He upped and said we were gonna... No, you gotta go outside, turn around 3 times and curse.
Spit.
Spit and curse.
Do everything. Go.
Go!
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 Go! These things have a half-life, you know? You can't just...
Did you?
Yes, I turned, I cursed, I spat, it froze.
You can't be too careful.
I think you can.
Bob Seska!
We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
The Bob Seska Show!
If I see one goddamn balloon before November 3rd, 2020, I'm coming to your house and I'm gonna throw down. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, August 20, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com, the greatest soap in the universe. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 943 of the Trump crisis, day 107 of the constitutional crisis, 441 days until the 2020 presidential election, and don't get happy, damn it. All right, sitting right over there, my good friend Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob.
Hi,
everybody. He's Bob, I'm Buzz. We are to broadcasting what the Russians are to nuclear safety. So you've come to the right show for that. Are we not the Greenland of podcasts? So bid high and bid to buy.
That's true. I've heard that too.
What do you say we all chip in and buy Jamaica? Who's with me?
I'm totally on board.
Now, there's a good real estate deal. If
yes, exactly.
Bob, I got so much on my mind. Sure. Like, for example, if you're against Antifa, does that make you profa? You need to...
I guess maybe a little.
And I don't know. I'm confused. I don't know what to make of this Planned Parenthood thing. I drove by yesterday, and they were having a condom clearance sale.
Oh, that's true. Again, another one of those things.
I didn't see that coming. Yeah, I know. The drummer.
I know.
And look at this headline. Look at this headline. Planned Parenthood withdraws from Title 10. I think that's the first time Planned Parenthood's gone with pulling out. I'm not sure about the history of that.
Yeah, it's a safe bet to pull out.
And
right?
I'll end with a true story. This week, this is true, a man in Alaska who was gathering firewood on the beach found a note in a bottle that was written by a Russian sailor. Now, I don't read Russian, but I'm pretty sure the note said, "How do you like him so far?"
All right. The great Buzz Burbank. From Buzz Burbank News and Comment, buzzburbank.com, realmnetwork.com. Okay, my friend, where do we get started here? You know what? The only place to start on a day like today is with a heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass.
Only Stormy Daniels would know if he would like that. I don't know.
Well, Stormy Daniels and Mike Pompeo both, because apparently Mike Pompeo is indeed a heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass. You know, by the way, I thought the heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass was known as KFC. I mean, I didn't know that it was an actual person. See, wait a minute. Where's my goddamn wrench? There we go. Thank you.
Well, maybe I'm misunderstanding the meaning of a heat-seeking missile in this context. Can you enlighten me?
Okay, well...
As to how is Pompeo the heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass?
Well, apart from the literal translation of that...
Yes. Apparently, that one I got.
According to a 21-page article, an unnamed former U.S. official, I mean, who could be anybody, but someone who is close to the Trump administration, described Mike Pompeo as being among the most sycophantic and obsequious people around Donald Trump. An unnamed former U.S. ambassador went further, calling Pompeo a heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass. And
there you go. That's very good.
Yes.
Yeah. I would have used home, but I get the idea now. Yeah, I know that I've heard that before and read that before that he is the top sycophant in the administration.
Yeah. Well, of course,
although it's a race.
Yeah, right. Well, we talked about this last week, in fact, that Donald Trump has no interest in having a State Department at all. He thinks he can do it all himself. So it kind of makes sense that the Secretary of State would simply be, you know, a heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass. Someone who is just going to do whatever Trump wants him to do as kind of a secretary or a surrogate. Because Donald Trump wants to do it all himself. He's the only guy, right, who is the art of the deal guy and who can make all of the deals himself. So, you know, all of these other presidents, the other 44 presidents of the United States who had actual...
The chumps.
Yeah, the stupid idiot chumps with, you know, secretaries of state and state departments to do international diplomacy. Ah, what a waste of time. All you need is just one guy and some Adderall. You know, that's chumps. You need to run the national security apparatus.
Yeah, I think Pompeo probably does take the lead, but there are a number of folks in the administration who compete for that role.
Yeah.
It's whatever the boss says. You know, if it doesn't matter. And you know all the crazy stuff he says from day to day and flip-flops on his own positions. And you go to these people and they always say, well, basically their answers are whatever he said.
Exactly. Which is also the case with Larry Kudlow.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We saw that very well illustrated this week.
Yes, we did. Now, this is the guy who is advising Donald Trump on the economy. So, shocker that the guy advising Donald Trump on the economy was hammered on every single one of the Sunday shows this past weekend, this past Sunday.
It did seem so. It did. Yeah, the way he rambled on, it did seem so. But, I'm not sure that Basically, he just defended the policy. I don't know how much Kudlow even leads the policy. Well, I think he, like the others, does what Trump tells him to, and his job is to get out there and defend it, which he attempted to do this weekend.
Well, I mean, we're going to assume that the normal running of an economic advisor's office is actually delivering advice to the president. Whether the president's listening to it or not is another story.
That,
right?
That could be our first mistake. Yeah. I don't know. But, because nothing seems... Nothing is done normally in this.
No. And at least of all going on the Sunday shows, you know, sober. I mean, here's Larry Kudlow. This is Larry Kudlow with Dana Perino.
And what's the context here? What time of day? This is like 9 a.m. or something, 9:30?
Yes. It's way too early to be this obliterated. I mean, he is. Yeah. It is hilarious. In fact, you know, one of the tapes that I find funniest, all the tapes that we play here in the show, one of my favorite is where someone took a tape of Jeff Goldblum and then slowed it down to sound like he's drunk. And he's talking about IMAX. This is an old IMAX commercial from like the 90s with Jeff Goldblum sounding like he's drunk.
What do you think the greatest gift of the holidays is? Internet? Yeah. I'd say internet.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it says, of course, as easy as it's always.
But of course, that's all digitally altered to make it sound like he's drunk.
And they did that to Hillary, too. And if you've ever sat in a bar across from somebody who was that drunk, you know also that not only do they stretch out their words, but they go on and on. So look for that, too, as you listen to this bit of audio.
Here's Larry Kudlow, and the first thing out of his mouth, I think, is the word Greenland, but you be the judge.
Greenland is a strategic place up there, and they got a lot of valuable minerals.
Let's go back there. Greenland is strategic, but they got a lot of valuable minerals. That's the president's economic advisor right there. Sleep tight, please, America.
More, please.
There's more.
Greenland is a strategic place up there, and they got a lot of valuable minerals. I don't want to predict an outcome. I'm just saying.
See, you hear what he said? They got a lot of valuable minerals.
Come on, just saying.
The president, who knows a thing or two about buying real estate, wants to take a look at low interest rates, no inflation, virtually no inflation, Chuck. So I actually think it's a pretty good story. And again, let me echo my theme. Let's not be afraid of some optimism.
Yeah, let me echo my theme there, Buzz. Why are you always preventing me from echoing my theme about Greenland?
You know, Bob, there are different stages of being drunk and different kinds of drunks. Some drunks want to fight.
Yeah.
Some drunks just want to be friends.
Yes.
And then you have this.
Right. Well, so Larry Kudlow must have had like 5 or 6 mimosas on an empty stomach. That's what I'm kind of thinking here. And my first reaction, quite honestly, Buzz, I tweeted about this Sunday morning. I said, Did he have some kind of medical event that's making him talk like this? Because I wanted to be absolutely sure before I said, oh, yeah, Larry Kudlow's drunk. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't.
Well, we don't know for sure, but it sure seems like it, doesn't it?
Yes, maybe a little bit. But, I mean, I obviously, as this is all sussed out of the subsequent couple of days, Larry Kudlow was hammered on the Sunday shows. And I quite honestly, I don't know why he's still employed. This is the sort of thing that Donald Trump really doesn't like. I mean, there are a lot of things that Donald Trump is okay with. I mean, a lot of horrible behavior. Being drunk in public, he's like, he doesn't like two things. He doesn't like people taking the spotlight away from him. And two, he doesn't like drunk people. I think was one of the reasons why he fired Steve Bannon, because he didn't like those two things. Steve Bannon always being out front, trying to take the spotlight for himself, and also, clearly being drunk most of the time. And so, because I think Donald Trump is a teetotaler because he lost a family member to alcoholism, that this is the sort of thing that he just doesn't tolerate. But this is one of those things.
And alcohol, but he loves Adderall. So
yeah, that's right. Do all the drugs you want. I mean, if you have some uppers laying around, that's fine and dandy, Larry.
Prescriptions, not drugs.
Right. Yeah, there is a difference, as Elvis Presley always taught us, that prescription drugs weren't actual drugs. I mean, you could take all you wanted, but as long as they're not illegal drugs, well, then you're fine.
Right.
You're not necessarily strung out on heroin. All right. So that was drunken Larry Kudlow. I just got to hear him say Greenland one more time.
Greenland is a strategic place.
No wonder we're so screwed. No wonder there's a recession on the horizon. This is the
it's
guy.
Fine.
Unbelievable.
I think he's still there for now because Trump doesn't need a scapegoat at the moment, and yeah. because Kudlow is one of those guys who will get out there and defend the president and his policies without much to back it up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, did you know, Buzz, that the fundamentals of the economy are strong? That's what we're told by Kellyanne Conway. Sure. This is one of those things that John McCain used in 2008. You know, as the economy was collapsing in a worldwide recession, the fundamentals of the economy, though, were perfectly strong. And this is what partially doomed the John McCain campaign. And it wasn't that long ago. So you really have to wonder who in the White House is going, hey, you know what? That line was pretty good. Let's recycle that one. Let's bring that one back because it worked out so well the first time.
It's as if conservatives have a book they work from. And this yeah. is in that book. And then you just look it up and there's right. the answer and you go with that.
Yeah.
Because it does repeat itself.
So the fundamentals of the economy are strong. What they're planning to do here, the solution to all of this, the excuse that Trump is going to throw around now is that the... Uh-huh. The Democrats are willing the country into a recession.
That's right.
Yes. Have you ever heard of something like that, where suddenly the opposition party goes, God, I hope the economy crashes, you know, just to screw that guy. See, that's what they do. They crash the economy to own the libs. I don't think we're behaving in the same way, because quite frankly, we all remember what it was like firsthand to experience the last time the economy dropped into a pretty deep recession. And so you think if it's possible to will the economy into a recession, you'd think it was also possible to will the economy to continue growing, right? I mean, that would be the logical inference from all of that.
Sure, the magic should work both ways.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not quite how it works. So what they're doing, the White House is now planning a payroll tax cut. In addition to blaming the Democrats if everything falls apart, they're deciding, well, hey, maybe one of the ways we can rescue the economy now is to plan this payroll tax cut. Yes, what we need to do is to undermine Social Security and Medicare in a way that won't actually stimulate the economy. You have to do those kind of tax cuts with other forms of stimulus. That's how the economy gets stimulated.
They're considering this move. They say, the White House says, this would not include any cuts to Medicaid or Social Security. We don't know whether to believe that or not, but that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And this is what they're proposing. And you have to try to find any amusing thing you can in this mess. And here's the amusing thing here, is that on one hand, Trump is saying the economy's fine.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, he's scrambling to make sure that it is, because he knows that's what he needs to get reelected in 2020. In fact, he knows that's the only thing that would get him reelected in 2020. It's the last little thread that he's hanging on to, and it's about to snap, or there's talk of that, and that scares the crap out of him.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing he's doing is he wants to blame Jerome Powell, who's the chairman of the Fed, and...
Oh, yeah, and Xi Jinping and the media.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's blaming a lot of people for this. Anybody but him, of course. But again... the thing he's blaming on people is the thing he says isn't happening.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing he's considering is canceling some of his tariffs, which is also an admission that,
yes.
Oh, maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's what's driving us into a brick wall here. Maybe that's what's destabilizing the market and creating all this volatility.
Trump would need Congress in order to do that payroll tax cut thing.
Right.
And by the way, just in time for the election.
Yeah.
You know, so that's probably not going to happen. This is a backstop. This word from inside the administration that, well, we might also consider dropping the tariffs. Mm-hmm. It's a last resort. They might do that if they think it will save. And I'm not sure anything can at this point, but if they think it will save his reelection effort, that is on the list, albeit the bottom of the list.
I get so frustrated, Buzz, and I think I ranted about this a little bit last Thursday, is this amnesia that we're getting from the Republicans and from the public at large, quite honestly, where...
Well, the some thought of it's understandable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. But, I mean, if you rewind just 10 years, I mean, 10 years wasn't that long ago. 10 years, we were in the first year of the Barack Obama administration, in which... You know, we were just trying to yank ourselves out of the Great Recession. And of course, Barack Obama made a bunch of moves early on in his administration, spending all kinds of political capital to rescue the economy from collapsing even further. And in fact, creating the largest economic expansion, or the longest economic expansion in American history. 10 years so far.
Thanks,
without a recession.
Obama.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Obama. But at the same time, one of the things that we learn in that process is that tax cuts do not stimulate economic growth by themselves. Now, just to illustrate, Barack Obama's stimulus contained what amounted to, in a dollar amount, the largest middle-class tax cut in American history up to that point. But he grouped that into all kinds of infrastructure spending. We all remember the billboards on the side of the road, the Recovery and Reinvestment Act, so on, all of the stimulus spending that was going on in the United States, in addition to some of the tax cut measures. And so that's how you do it. You don't just cut taxes, because what people do with their tax cuts most often, especially wealthier people, is they just stick it in the bank or they reinvest it. They're not investing in jobs and all that crap. That's a bunch of hooey. That's a myth.
And what regular people do when they get their $10 a month tax break or their $30 a month tax break, whatever, it goes toward paying the freaking bills, which 40% of Americans report they are struggling to do.
That's right.
So this doesn't grow the economy. This just barely covers the freaking bills.
But none of it matters, Buzz, because it's just the Democrats going, I hope there's a recession. I hope there's a recession. I hope there's a recession.
Well, you know, Bill Maher has wished for a recession.
Yeah.
Nobody wants one.
No.
Well, if there's a hope on the progressive side, it is that if there is a recession, we hope that it guarantees Trump's defeat in the 2020 election.
Yeah, yeah.
I my greatest concern now, because I've been watching this, and you have too, the predictions of when such a recession would occur. Current signs say about 15 months away. My concern is it's going to fall in the early days of the next probably Democratic administration. And once again, it's like, here's the bag of burning dog shit on your front porch again. We're off to see the wizard. We're out of here. Goodbye.
That's right.
And that's it. And so Democrats are once again stuck with a crap economy.
Yeah.
And that's what. So I'm concerned, because now the forecasters are saying, well, it could be after the election.
Yeah.
They go, oh crap, that's not going to help us at all. So no, I'm not wishing for a recession. I wouldn't mind if the fear of one helped defeat Donald Trump.
That's
and,
right.
And frankly, Bob, as soon as next month, his own supporters are going to feel this at the grocery store as they buy meat and dairy and garlic and other common items that we get from China. And the tariffs will go up on that. Grocery bills will go up. People can't afford for grocery bills to go up. They're going to be very unhappy. As soon as a month from now, people are going to be bitching about Trump, even those who had supported him.
I think, first of all, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen next year. Second of all, from the perspective of wishing for this to happen or willing it to happen, the fact of the matter is that most of us, I would say a good 99% of us, don't want a recession to happen. But if it does happen, there's a welcome kind of side effect, which is undercutting Donald Trump's approval numbers and so on, and putting him at risk for not being reelected in 2020. So if there is a silver lining to that dark cloud, and that's what I think how we're all looking at the possibility of a recession. Sure. My big concern, this is one of the reasons why I always couple discussions of recession with discussions of the budget deficit, because I always get perpetually concerned about the fact that the Republicans are constantly playing this game. In fact, you can see the trend starting back with Reagan and Bush in the 1980s and then handing off to Bill Clinton, who then has to rescue the economy but is also faced with a catastrophic budget deficit. So the challenge then is to grow the economy and also shrink the budget deficit down to something that's manageable. But what they do is they do this starve the beast thing where, okay, you know what, we're gonna pass all these tax cuts just like George W. Bush did, just like Donald Trump did, but we're not gonna pay for them. We're not gonna do anything to make sure that we have revenue that compensates for the amount of lost revenue due to the tax cuts. So they don't do that, and they raise, of course, a federal budget deficit that by the end of the latest projections I've seen is that by the end of 2020, The budget deficit is going to be $1.1 trillion, which is about the same as it was in, oh, shocker, 2009, when the Republicans were screaming at Barack Obama for spending too much. And, you know, of course, Barack Obama wanted to do all the things to stimulate the economy, to spend us out of the recession. And they claimed poverty. They claimed austerity. What we need to do is cut spending. What we need to do is cut taxes. And of course, all the numbers that we saw, all the projections from just about every economist are saying, no, that you don't want to cut spending. You don't want to cut taxes. What you want to do is cut taxes for middle class earners, but at the same time, increase spending as much as you can because, well, you can. The United States has great credit. We can continue to spend if we need to. But what the Republicans like to do is to say, well, you know what, we'll rack up a gigantic deficit going into the next Democratic administration. And then from there, we'll just say, oh, yeah, look, there's a giant deficit. You can't spend anything on health care or crappy things like education. How sexy is that? Oh, you're not going to deal with education. And certainly you're not going to spend any money on stimulating the economy. It's immensely frustrating. But this is kind of what they do. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's so that in late January of 2021, the doorbell can ring at the White House and there'll be a flaming brown paper bag sitting there. Once again and just in time.
That's right. That's right.
And that's what we're going to have. And then whatever economic suffering that occurs after that will be somehow attached to the new president.
Well, I don't know about you, Buzz, but I'm really enjoying, for the first time ever, I'm enjoying Donald Trump's freak out over the last three or four days.
Sure. I mean, it's scary because you don't know if it's going to hit you in the eye, but it's exciting to watch at the same time. It's like sitting trackside at a drag race.
Mm-hmm.
A tire could fly off and kill you, but you still want to be on the front row to get a good look.
That's right. That's a great way to put it.
That's what we're watching with Trump here. Yeah. He's out of control, and some of it's funny. Some of it involves nuclear weapons. You be the judge as to, you know, how amused to be.
Well, most specifically, what I'm talking about here is the fact that this Fox News poll came out showing, Joe Biden 12 points ahead of Donald Trump in a head-to-head matchup in the general, and the other Democrats, the other three top-tier Democrats also showing.
Warren beats him by 6.
Yeah.
That's healthy. That's a strong win.
Yeah.
So 12 for Biden is a landslide.
Absolutely. And so these numbers, because they came from Fox News Channel, are making Donald Trump shit in his big boy pants. That's exactly what's going on right now. So as a consequence of all of that, Donald Trump is trying to figure out ways that he can rig the 2020 election so that if he does lose, per these poll numbers, if they turn out to be accurate, that he's going to wheel out one of these excuses, or maybe all of the excuses, to say that, you know what, this election, this 2020 election, this is something that needs to be invalidated because of all of these things, Google and voter fraud and all the rest of it. And so these are obviously, this is how he's going to approach this. If he is going to contest the 2020 election, it's going to be by saying that undocumented immigrants were the ones who skewed just like his conspiracy theory about California in 2016 with the 3 million illegal voters that he claims, and which has been repeatedly debunked not only by fact checkers, but also by his own voter fraud commission, which by hearing him speak, Buzz, you would think that voter fraud was a big enough deal to let the voter fraud commission last more than 8 months. But he shut it down after 8 months. Why? Well, because he couldn't really find anything.
And even recently, again, he's talked about voter fraud as the thing that he wants addressed. I think that's been echoed in the Republican Senate as well, as opposed to addressing any Russian interference and dealing with any of that.
That's right.
They're back to this voter fraud, voter ID, fake voting thing that, as you just pointed out, as we learned from many, including his own commission, statistically doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. So, it doesn't exist at all.
And again, this is what we can expect. I prefer, on the other hand, this is more fun, I think. I now just believe whatever Anthony Scaramucci says.
You too? I'm totally on board with that.
So, no, the mooch, maybe it's true, but I think what you're about to hear that I got from the mooch is every bit as likely. Forgive me, but I think it's every bit as likely as what you just outlined. That in 2020, prior to the election, Trump will see that he has no chance and will back out of the race. Will back out of running for re-election.
Yeah, yeah. In fact,
Again, it's the mooch, so I don't know whether to believe this guy or not. I normally wouldn't, although this is an opportunity to believe in something that I want to believe in, as opposed to what you just said. So I'm gonna go with the mooch on this one, just because it sounds like more fun.
Well, you remember I actually called that one too, and I don't think that I'm necessarily right, or that the mooch is necessarily right about what Donald Trump is going to do with 2020. In this case, Donald Trump dropping out of the 2020 race because he knows he's going to lose. I was just passing along in my Salon article a couple of months ago. I was just passing along a rumor that I had overheard in a Washington D.C. social circle that said something along the lines of Donald Trump dropping out of the race in 2020, allegedly because of health concerns or some other excuse, and then lobbying the delegates at the convention to nominate Ivanka Trump in his place to carry on this Trump dynasty, knowing that the dynasty otherwise would get cut off after 4 years. Thank God if that ends up being the case. But this is something that's going around, and I don't know how legitimate it is. Again, I preface everything that I have said here about this matter as being a rumor, as being somewhat unsubstantiated, and a wild outside-the-box kind of possibility. But at the same time, everything about this presidency has been wild and outside the box.
Exactly. So, that's the point. It's unpredictable. Yeah. And that's why, you know, the Mooch's theory is interesting and intriguing and possible and, in my case, preferred.
Yeah. Well, in fact, one of the things that I was discussing in that particular Salon article was the possibility, too, that Donald Trump might drop Mike Pence and replace Mike Pence with Ivanka Trump. And that's something that Trump was actually asked about during one of his chopper talks the other day. And he pledged that he was going to keep Mike Pence. Now, Donald Trump was speaking about Mike Pence in the past tense. He has been a good vice president. He didn't say Mike Pence is a good vice president. He said he has been, and he's done very well. So everything was in the past tense. And I don't know if that was a tell, but it was maybe just a little bit of opening there that he could weasel out of in a year or so, right?
To feed the conspiracy theory, he canceled that trip to New Jersey, I believe Pence did.
Yeah.
At about the same time, the rumor was circulating about Ivanka. Here's what I wondered then and now, if we must consider this, and apparently we must in this day and age.
I guess.
What I wonder now is, would the misogyny of Trump's base allow that?
That's an interesting question. I think they would, and I'll tell you why. Because I think they were willing to accept nominees to the cabinet like Ben Carson and so on. They like their tokens. The Trump Republicans with red hats.
In subservient positions, yes.
Yeah. Well, you see how they applaud when Donald Trump brings up, I've got the lowest African-American employment, the lowest Asian employment. And so they like that because it makes them look less racist than they actually are. It's like someone who says, hey, look at my black friend here. Hey, look, I don't hate women. I like Ivanka.
What kind of damage could Barbie do?
That's right. Speaking of women in the Trump administration, you know, I was thinking about this. You know who could use some Plexiderm on their face is Kellyanne Conway. They have her. I think they've exiled her to someplace off campus. They've sent her somewhere because it always looks.
Yeah, I don't know. I just read she probably could use this help, but I just read that she thinks that Antifa means anti-First Amendment. She thinks that's what that means.
Jesus. And she thinks recession is the Sesame Street word of the day. That's something else that I overheard her saying. Yeah, totally. That's exactly what. Make sure you downplay the threat of a recession by comparing it to a Sesame Street Street word of the day. That's some smart politics right there. But I think what would be smart for Kellyanne Conway, I think what would be smart for all of us who are maybe a little bit older than 40 years old, is to pick up some Plexiderm at triplexiderm.com using the coupon code SEXYLIBERAL for my discount. Plexiderm is amazing. What you do is it's a cream that you put on your under eye bags and fine lines and wrinkles, and it temporarily eliminates them in just minutes. It's kind of an amazing thing. I mean, by itself, even if you don't need it, just to experiment with it, just to see it actually work, is kind of an incredible thing to do. And by the way, I'm not talking about days or weeks for it to work. It's not like some of the other creams and gels and so on where you have to do it every day in this regimen for 6 months and then maybe it'll kind of sort of work. No, Plexiderm is clinically studied to visibly eliminate under eye bags and wrinkles in just a few minutes. In minutes. The science behind Plexiderm is incredible with clinical studies to back it up. If you look older and tired because of crow's feet, wrinkles, or under eye bags, you can look younger in just minutes with Plexiderm, right? See for yourself. Watch a real video with real people and see how fast crow's feet, wrinkles, and under eye bags just vanish. Those results are backed up by Plexiderm's 30-day satisfaction guarantee for you. Go to triplexiderm.com right now. Use the coupon code, as I said, SEXYLIBERAL, two words, all caps, for my discount. That's triplexiderm.com with the code SEXYLIBERAL or call 1-800-685-1292 and mention SEXYLIBERAL. Thank you so much.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show.
This is Paul Melanson. The song is called King Sham from his album called Camera Obscura. BobSeska.com/music if you want to submit. Lots of great music coming up here in the month of August for the Indie Music Countdown at the end of the month. And just loving every single one of our indie bands here and our indie recording artists. I'm getting so many great emails, too, from other indie recording artists who are submitting their music and thanking me for playing this stuff on the show. But, I mean, it's
wonderful.
I'm just opening the door. It's all of your great work coming in that door that makes it really good, that makes this all entirely worth it. So thank you to all of our indie musicians, indie recording artists for submitting all of their fine, fine music. All right.
Yeah.
So, we were mentioning all these excuses that Donald Trump is going to wheel out to invalidate the 2020 election. And you know, the voter fraud one to me, Buzz, is just as bullshit as, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people. It's as stupid an excuse as you could possibly have, because there are two major Republican administration studies about voter fraud, and not a single goddamn one of them actually showed that there was any voter fraud at all.
And some legitimate studies, too.
Yeah. I mean, the George W. Bush, John Ashcroft, Department of Justice, studied voter fraud nationwide for about 5 years, specifically looked at the 2002 and 2004 elections, and found that there were only, I think the number is 26 actual convictions out of 197 million total votes cast. That's a voter fraud rate of, here it comes, 0.0000013%, which is statistically, as you said earlier, Buzz, statistically zero.
Well, we've tried throwing the facts at them before, and it doesn't seem to help. This is one of those issues like climate change and immigration and abortion and everything else. Either you're on one side or the other. Facts be damned. Mm-hmm. In the case of one of the sides.
So I expect all of the red hats to do the Dumb and Dumber reaction to this study. So you're telling us there's a chance, right? There's a 0.0000013%. Oh, So you're saying there's a chance.
And it is. It's the distraction that they always meant it to be as part of their attempt to suppress votes, of course.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is the sheer number of voter ID laws that are on the books state by state. I think we're looking at somewhere around 30 states with voter ID laws, despite the fact that there is no such thing as in-person voter fraud, which is what voter ID is explicitly designed to prevent. So it's a...
And some of the laws won't even allow voter IDs from colleges and that sort of thing. So large groups of people are excluded from voting because of some of the ridiculous details in these ridiculous laws.
So if I told you there was a 0.0000013% chance that you had testicular cancer, what would you amount to a 99.9999987% chance that you were cancer-free, would you have your testicles removed anyway? I sure as hell would not. That's just me.
Not based on those numbers, no.
No, definitely, definitely not. And then the other study was, of course, the Trump Kobach, Chris Kobach. Is it, how do you say that, Buzz? Kobach? Or
Kobach.
Kobach. Okay, yeah. So Chris Kobach did this study for eight months, and it was entirely disbanded. And they claimed that it was because the commission was stonewalled by the states. They're saying, no, we're not going to hand over our
to some degree, that's true. As a blue state, would you trust your voter information? Would you hand over the name of your registered voters to this administration?
Yeah.
I think not.
Especially after the cozy relationship with Russia, right?
Right,
and
right.
But at the same time, the fact of the matter is that normally in any of these long-term, very vast investigations, there are always legal imbroglios that take place. There's always legal wrangling to get documents and to get information, and there's always wrangling over jurisdiction and so on. So that's supposed to be built into the actual process of having a study like this or having a commission like this. In fact, one of the commissioners... The actual Trump-appointed commissioners, this guy, Matthew Dunlop, said that even though the idea was to investigate voter fraud, it is pretty clear that the purpose of the commission was actually to affirm and validate the president's claims whether or not we had any evidence of any such voter conduct.
See, just like Larry Kudlow.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. This is an actual Chris Kobach commissioner saying... you know what? This was all about validating Donald Trump's crazy conspiracy theory. And I guess at some point, someone must have gone, you know what? This isn't worth it because we're not really turning up anything. And if we turn up zero, then we're going to look really embarrassed and really, really stupid.
And they did anyway. They looked stupid by launching it in the first place. They looked even stupider by ending it.
But, Trump always makes things worse for Trump.
Unfortunately, and everyone else in the process.
Yeah, that too. Well, it's happening again now with this Google study that Trump is freaking out about because, of course, Trump was yelling at his TV yesterday morning, happened to flip on Fox Business Channel and saw this report indicating, at least to the Fox audience, that 2.6 million to 16 million votes in favor of Hillary Clinton were manipulated by Google, by the Google search results.
He's still on that. He won, and he's still on that. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. The Google study that he tweeted about was conducted by this psychologist, Robert Epstein, who reported that, quote, search results were on average biased in favor of Hillary Clinton in the 25 or 30 days before the election, at least according to the study. But my question when everyone says, oh, they're biased in favor of Hillary Clinton, was there a deliberate bias or was reality just biased in favor of
or were some of those searches Trump supporters searching for dirt on Hillary Clinton?
I mean, it's possible that reality just leaned in favor of Clinton during that time. I mean, of course, that period of time also had the Access Hollywood tape. So, yeah, naturally, there are going to be some pro-Clinton bias in the actual news events. Not deliberate, but in the actual course of reporting the news. But the other thing is that this survey was just conducted among 95 people. So he was able to extrapolate out of 95 people, 2.6 million votes at the lowest point, at the lowest floor.
And what makes him see 95 people as indicative of the entire world, the entire country, at least, because that's what he's focused on. He's still on losing to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
The popular vote. He's mad because more people were talking about her on Google than were talking about or searching for him.
And, you know, the other thing is, too, that as we all know, any of us who use Google, you know, to look things up, as the entire world does, is we know that very often the Google algorithm will turn up results that are specific to us in terms of what we often look for on Google, right, what we use Google for, the kind of results that we often click on. Those are the results that are going to be weighted more toward individuals, right?
Google is like our advisor, the way Trump has advisors. It tells us what we want to hear.
Yeah. Or put another way, I think, right. That's a great way to put it. In fact, Philip Bump from the Washington Post pointed this out. He wrote that Google search results are specific to users. Yeah. And there's no indication in the summary of this particular study by Robert Epstein, there's no mention of using incognito mode or anything like that, that any effort was made to return unweighted results from the search engine, right? So the study didn't weed out the ones that were geared toward the user's interests in order to determine how many Google search results were deliberately fed to these 26 people, like as if that sample size has any bearing on anything, right?
I'm Google. I know you. I know everything about you. I know what you like. I know what you did last summer.
Oh,
I'm
holy Google. Shit. Holy shit. That needs to become a thing. You need to become the new voice of Google, at least.
The ominous and slightly evil voice of Google, yes.
That's right. Oh, holy shit. So whenever you hear Donald Trump or any of the Republicans screaming about voter fraud, the best way to chalk that up is that they're lying.
I'm ashamed of myself because I didn't snag this guy's name, but I came across a guy on Twitter today whose feed, his own page, is about finding stuff that, looking at stuff that Trump has tweeted.
Yeah.
And then finding the thing that was said on Fox News just before that made him tweet it. And yeah. So it's a correlation page. It's you can go there as a resource and look up, okay, well, when he said this, he was talking about this particular piece that he saw on Fox News. And when he said, so while we're on the internet, we're talking about Google, I was reminded of this guy on Twitter who actually correlates Trump's tweets to reports on Fox News.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's extraordinarily helpful. That whoever that guy is who's drawing those parallels, creating those correlations, because
find him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I would say 90% of what Trump tweets is just basically Trump yelling at his television or stealing what he hears on his television and making it his own. That's what he does a lot. He just completely plagiarizes people on Fox News Channel, too, and then says it's his own. Occasionally, one of his staffers will do it, but they'll put it in quotes. Donald Trump seldom ever actually directly quotes anyone he's stealing from. So we were talking about Mike Pompeo earlier, and I just want to kind of loop this into the conversation about the 2020 presidential election. There was a quote that Mike Pompeo delivered today that needs to be included in every single Democratic national security ad from now until Election Day, especially the ones that are targeted into suburban areas of the swing states. And that is this following quote, where Mike Pompeo acknowledged today that there are, quote, places where ISIS is more powerful today than they were 3 or 4 years ago. Again, we're not necessarily reveling in this news, but now that it has happened, Democrats running for president right now, you have to use this quote. He has been.
Unfortunately, the Democrats running for president have not made it a point to talk about foreign policy, and I put a lot of the blame on the networks that have sponsored debates so far
for not asking about or spending any time on foreign policy.
Yeah.
Look around. Look at the world news. The world is on fire.
That's right.
You know, maybe we ought to consider that and this nation's place in it, in these debates, and that has not been done. But even the candidates out on the trail certainly have not been talking about these kinds of things. We certainly should. I would like to see this included as well. It's not as hot button or sexy as some of the other things that are being discussed, but it's very, very important.
Yeah, you know, and that's actually a topic, too, that Anderson Cooper spoke with Stephen Colbert about the other night. And one of the best interviews I've seen in a while with, with Colbert. And Colbert is just one of the finest men on television right now. I mean, as far as being endlessly hilarious, being smart as fuck. Holy shit, is Stephen Colbert a smart guy. And he's also, he's very thoughtful and caring. I mean, it's his religion drives that. And one of the things they were talking about is the fact that Donald Trump's constantly bragging about how the world respects us again and they're no longer laughing at us, when in fact, they're laughing more at us, and they respect
and
us less.
Crying more. They certainly respect us less. I don't think it's funny. I think it was funny to them at first, like it was with a lot of us.
Yeah.
But that has long since worn off. I think they detest the guy now.
Right.
And they detest having to deal with him, and they too are looking forward to 2020. And by the way, I don't know if you caught this or not, the tease at the end of Rachel Maddow's show last night. Lawrence O'Donnell teased that he would have at the end of his show someone who was predicting a Democratic lock on the 2020 election. And the thing about this political science professor is that she was exactly spot on when no one else was in predicting the outcome of the 2018 midterms. She predicted 40 seats. It was 40 seats. She was right on the money. Nobody else was. She sees a minimum of 278 electoral votes for the whoever the Democrat is in 2020.
Wow.
And possibly as many as 282. So she's looking at that range there. But she says, based on her calculations and those that four state difference in that range, those are harder to predict states. But she says, even no matter what those harder to predict states do, those four states, the country will have, the rest of the country will have generated 278 electoral votes for the Democrat based on her research. And this is a poli-sci professor who was dead spot on in the midterms.
Yeah. I think if we have more weeks like this past week for Donald Trump, the past maybe 7 or 10 days, we have more weeks like that through 2020 combined with a recession. Well, it's going to be very, very difficult for Donald Trump to get reelected. And I think, you know, he's making a colossal mistake. And we've talked about this mistake. This is, I'm not breaking any news by saying this, but the longer that he continues to pander to his red hats at these rallies, the less well he's going to do in 2020, because people are tired of that. Because I kind of like to group people I know into this category, which is my way of trying to find a way to still respect them, which is that I think they assumed when they had voted for Donald Trump, they assumed that he was going to, here comes that word, they were hoping that he would pivot. They were thinking, oh, as soon as he gets elected, or maybe as soon as he gets the nomination, maybe he'll pivot. As soon as he gets elected, maybe he'll pivot. As soon as the inauguration happens, maybe he'll pivot.
You must know more reasonable people than I do, because the people I know who voted for Trump don't want him to pivot at all.
Yeah, that may be the case. But, you know, I'm at least trying to superimpose that attitude upon them. this is my way is not hating them.
Right. This professor, whose last name I've forgotten, said that she believes that this 2020 election is not about the Republicans who might be swayed, and not even about the independents who might be swayed. She said there is a strong enough, motivated enough Democratic base out there to get those 278 electoral votes by her calculations. I have said on this show before, I know, that, and this is sort of reflexive of what you just said about Trump and appealing to his base, every day he is in office, he does something or says something that makes Democrat and progressive voters even more angry and more motivated to go to the polls in 2020 and absolutely crush him, which I think gives credence to the professor's projection.
Well, actually, I'm glad we went down this road talking about 2020 because I have an observation, a very brief observation, but an observation nevertheless about Bernie Sanders that I'd like to talk about after a quick break here. We'll take a break, come back.
Geez.
Yeah, I know. Talking about Bernie Sanders here in a minute. And well, not specifically about Bernie. I think some of you know what I'm about to get into right after these words.
Hey, dude. Being at the racetrack is a blast! High five!
Whoa, man, you can put your arm down now.
What, you gonna leave me hanging? Come on, bring it in for a hug.
That's okay, man. We're cool.
What's the matter? We're all buds, man.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I think you need to take a pit stop.
What? I'm not driving a race car, man.
No, pit stop. It's, well, an all-natural deodorant that'll keep your pits from, being the pits.
Oh, no. My pits are the pits?
Hey, don't worry, man. Luckily, my pals over at Bubble Genius have you covered. They've created all-natural stuff to help with summer stank. Everything from pit stop deodorant to cooling facial mist to talc-free body powders that leave you soft, not sweaty.
Hey, cool!
You said it. Bubble Genius keeps you cool all summer long.
BubbleGenius.com!
Bob Seska!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It seems like gravity's really got its hold on me.
Sorry.
I know you stepped on it, Buzz. Damn it.
I did.
That was really my fault and my slow fingers, my lethargy.
Let us have our fun. This is smooth. This is almost yacht rock music to me.
It is 100% yacht rock, in fact. This is Young Guns Silver Fox, another track from their AM Waves album, one of the revelations on our slate of indie music here on the show.
We will play this. We will play this song on the boat that we rent when you come back down here to Florida.
I guess as long as I can wear my captain's hat and my Hawaiian shirt.
Your hat awaits you.
Absolutely. This is... I think I listen to this album at least once a day. Young Gun, Silver Fox, AM Waves is the name of the album. The song is called Mojo Rising. Every single song on this album is 100%. 100%. I just love it so much.
Smooth.
Yeah, yeah. Just it's modern yacht rock. It's yacht rock, you know, late 70s, early 80s yacht rock, but with a modern edge. I love it so much. Okay.
Chilling.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so I mentioned Bernie Sanders here. I think here's the thing, and this is something I've prefaced every discussion of Bernie Sanders with, and that is to say, I don't hate Bernie Sanders. I really don't. I like a lot of the things he has to say. I find him spunky and interesting. By the way, spunky is always a word that's used in relation to old people. So I didn't mean to say spry is another one. Have you said that's
well,
something?
Well, yeah. See, that conjures old.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a great way to...
Spunky. You can even be a spunky kid. I don't necessarily... So. But spry, now that sounds like an old person word.
Yeah. That is kind of it. But in fact, there was a video clip going around. They played a baseball game at the Field of Dreams in Iowa. And I tell you what, between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and their amazing running, they are those two. I mean, I think Elizabeth Warren's about 70. Bernie Sanders is, what do we say, 77, 76, somewhere around there.
Yeah, something.
They can run better than I can run. If I ran the way they ran, man, I would drop to the ground with like a wobbly knee or something.
You know, Warren is just a simmering time bomb. She's a bomb. She's a Molotov cocktail of energy.
Yes.
And just waiting to go off. And so it doesn't surprise me that she has the energy for this. But regarding both of them, wouldn't you have to have that kind of stamina to run for president? Because the demands of that are insane.
Yeah, I mean, he was out there. Bernie Sanders was out there pitching and hitting and running the bases. And I'm looking at that going, if I threw a softball like that today, my shoulder would be unusable for about 48 hours to 72 hours, somewhere around there.
Come on. Yeah. You're still doing that. You're still throwing the iron around, aren't you?
Well, kind of. But yeah, it's a whole different motion to throw, you know. And I haven't been running either because.
True.
Yeah, you know why I haven't been running, Buzz? Because I injured the heel of my foot. But yet Bernie Sanders is like twice my age and he's out there running around. But anyway, so here's the overall point that I was going to get at here. All of the Democrats, every single one of the Democrats and their campaigns are, for the most part, I mean, some are taking shots at the front runner, which is normally that's normal. You take shots at whoever's in the lead. And that's kind of going on a little bit. But none of the Democrats are really taking harmful shots at each other necessarily.
It got a little uncomfortable for me in the last Democratic debate
because
it was getting a little snippy there. And when really, again, as someone, Swalwell, who's no longer in, or someone pointed out, we're fighting among ourselves, and that's really not what we should be doing. So I'm glad that we get those reminders. I hope we continue to get those reminders. You're going to see a little of this. They're competitive. They're competing.
Yeah.
So some of this is going to happen. I just hope that it doesn't get too ugly.
Yeah.
And so far, I think the indications are that we might get away with that it might not have to get too ugly.
Well,
in the cases where one candidate's been aggressive toward another, in many cases, that's somebody had to back down, and that was therefore mooted.
Yeah, well, the problem here is that, and I wish the Bernie people would all get together and try to convince the campaign to stop using Susan Sarandon on the campaign trail because she is an enormously divisive character, especially given the way she campaigned in 2016, eventually voted for Jill Stein, said it was okay, welcomed Donald Trump to become president, because after all, Donald Trump becomes president, it'll stoke the revolution and blah, 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 here we are.
I loved Susan Sarandon until she started talking about politics, not because I disagreed with her politics, but because I realized she was nuts. And, so it's very unfortunate. I know that political campaigns love to attach themselves and love to be attached by celebrities. I think we've reached a point with Sarandon's credibility that she is, that it cancels out her star assets. I don't think she's helping. I think, and yeah, as you said, being very divisive too.
Yeah. Well, in divisive in terms of attacking Elizabeth Warren of all people. I mean, I could see
subtly, yes.
Yeah, I could see her going after one of the more conservative Democrats, but going after Elizabeth Warren, who basically has all the Venn diagram overlap with Bernie Sanders as far as politics goes, as far as their platform goes. There's no reason to go after Elizabeth Warren other than to say, you know what, we're the only progressive candidates on this stage, despite the fact that Elizabeth Warren has incredible progressive bona fides to back her up. And so I don't understand why she's doing this. We don't need to have this kind of attitude right now.
Here's how I like to think about this. Elizabeth Warren was a Republican for about 5 minutes back in the day.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders became a Democrat 5 minutes ago.
That is 100% true. That is, of course, 100% true. And, you know, we can start parsing votes, too, if we want to, and see, you know, where Bernie Sanders happens to land. I think Elizabeth Warren, actually, in terms of her votes, is considered more progressive than Bernie Sanders, vote by vote. I mean, that may not mean what their personal values are necessarily, but as far as their voting record goes.
In his defense, Sanders is holding his own. It had appeared that he slipped a little in the ranking, Elizabeth Warren outdoing him. But Bernie hasn't lost either. He's holding solid at around 15-16%. So it's not like the wheels are coming off Bernie's campaign. He's still got a chance. I'm just seeing more buzz for Warren. Obviously, Biden's still out front. I read something interesting today. It's sort of basic and obvious, I guess, but sometimes it helps to see these things crystallized. And that is that Biden is once again out front of the other Democratic candidates by a double-digit lead. Why is that? Well, because he hasn't said anything.
Yeah.
He hasn't made any more gaffes, and as long as he lays low, this is a funny way to run for president. As long as he does that, he's going to continue to have that lead, because in the analysis that I read and now agree with, America sees this. American voters see this. Democratic voters see this, and that is, now he's got me doing it. Democratic voters, which is exactly what he wanted, damn it.
Yeah.
But Democratic voters see Bernie Sanders as somebody who won't upset the economic apple cart. The majority of American Democratic voters, as I understand it, are not interested in any kind of radical changes to health care and to our economic system or anything that would affect that or the distribution of wealth. They don't want anything too radical in economically or in terms of health care. And Biden represents a sort of a safe vote, but at the same time, he is the embodiment of the real reason Democrats will go to the polls in 2020, and that is to beat Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a safe vote, but at the same time, he might not be a safe vote. But
right, and this could change on a, this could turn on a dime. Yeah. This could change while we're talking.
Yeah, and of course, I'm completely fine with Joe Biden being the nominee. I'm completely fine sure. with Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, and Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is the nominee. I'm going to campaign for Bernie Sanders. It's just going to make it way easier for me and many others to do that if Susan Sarandon isn't part of it. Because I think...
Shuts up, yeah.
I think the thing, and I've mentioned this before, but bear with me as I repeat it again, that the thing that bothers me about Bernie is not necessarily Bernie. It's the people who surround Bernie. And I'm talking
some
about...
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them.
We're seeing a poll survey indicating now that a lot of Bernie supporters are willing to, eager to vote for whoever
yeah.
the Democratic nominee is, whoever can beat Trump. There will be... Of the Bernie supporters, I would say at least 15% of them, maybe higher in his case, maybe 40, maybe as high as 40% of them, are going to be Bernie all the way.
Yeah.
We'll never win all of them, but we could win many of them in terms of support for the nominee. One other piece of campaign news I want to throw in that I read that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And that is to see that Julian Castro has now made it as the 10th participant in the debate. And here's why I like that. Julian Castro is not ready to be president, but he's part of this amazing pool that we have of talent. And I swear, when I listen to Julian Castro speak, I feel I'm listening to Barack Obama.
Yes!
He has the same temperament, the same intellect, the same compassion. He's so well measured in what he says, so precise in what he says, so right on target, so accurate with what he says, and he says it calmly and intelligently.
Yes.
This guy just reminds me incredibly of Obama, and we mustn't lose sight of him. And as I've said before, I've been drinking with Larry Kudlow. As I've said before, I've now I don't remember because I enjoyed that joke.
You're talking about Julian Castro.
Yeah. As I've said before, I think much of the Democratic field, and I saw somebody say this on Twitter today, that much of, if not most of the Democratic field, great cabinet, best cabinet ever.
Yeah.
And I hope that some of that works out, regardless of who the nominee is. We're going to support the nominee, whoever that is.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to second everything you said about Julian Castro right there. I think he is, the word that always comes to mind when I see him speak is the word steady. He is steady. He is rock solid when he's talking about these things. I never have to worry. It's the same with Pete Buttigieg. Both of them have this way of talking about the issues where I never have to worry about them potentially stumbling over their own words or not drawing a salient enough argument in support of their position. I always can just ease back and let it wash over me and absorb what they're saying without having to always consider, well, shit, I hope they don't fuck this up. And it never happens. And that's what the great thing about both of them. I just feel like both Pete Buttigieg and Julian Castro need a few more years to bake. They need a few more years in the oven. And either one of them can be an enormously successful presidential candidate and maybe even enormously successful president of the United States. I think.
Yeah, let's keep them. Keep them in the hallway. Keep them handy.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and again, I mean, Julian Castro, I think, is going to be the first Latino president one of these days. So just go out and say that.
That would be great, because we'd love to have that sort of articulate warmth once again.
Yep.
And I will say to Bernie Sanders supporters, it doesn't look great for Bernie right now. He's not out of the race, but it doesn't look real promising for him to be the nominee. It's possible, though. Yep. And if it happens, Bob and I are voting for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll sit here on this show talking about why people should vote for Bernie Sanders over Donald Trump. Absolutely, 100%. All I ask for at this point is that you don't make it difficult for us to make that transition, and vice versa. I mean, I don't think we should make it difficult for people to make the transition to supporting Bernie Sanders or any of the other nominees. I think what we need to do is play as nice as possible. Take some shots when I think they're well-deserved. Like, I think Kamala Harris getting the racism thing with the forced busing and all that crap out of the way in one of the earlier debates, I think that was smart. But as we get closer and closer to Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, and all the rest, Super Tuesday, that you start to holster some of that shit and bear in mind the overall outcome. Because I think the one thing that will destroy Democratic chances based on the solid polling that's happening now is another protracted, ugly primary battle like we had in 2008 and like we had in certainly in 2016. And we, as long as we can avoid that, I think all bets are on the idea right now of whoever can destroy Donald Trump. That has got to be the priority.
I just want mommy and daddy to stop fighting.
That's exactly right. You know, I remember David Ferguson texted me back in 2008 during the Obama-Clinton primary fracas and was like, when are mommy and daddy going to stop fighting, Bob? I don't know. I wish I knew. I wish it was over now. Okay, we've got a big post-mortem show coming up next on our Patreon page. Again, our 1,000th subscriber gets to co-host an episode of the show. So go to BobSeskaShow.com. Sign up right now for at least $1 a month. You won't miss that money coming out of your bank account every month. Meanwhile, make sure to listen to the best hour of news that you're going to hear on any podcast anywhere in the world. That is Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Every damn Thursday, I have a little commentary in there myself. I join in the fun every Thursday, too. So go to BuzzBurbank.com, also RealmNetwork.com, and everywhere you get your podcasts, listen to Buzz Burbank News and Comment.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, Postmortem Show coming up next, my friends. See you over there. Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Lee Papa, host of AGD Podcast with the Rude Pundit. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll love my show, where every week I talk about politics and interview funny, fascinating, and filthy people. Find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.